Sean Heyman, insider for MLB Network.
Chicago is watching carefully, no question about it.
New York Post columnist, Curb Your Enthusiasm enthusiast.
You hate people.
Well, I hate people individually, but I love mankind.
Sean Heyman with Mully and Haw.
I'm going to endorse the point where I say you never know with the Cubs, but I'm going to retract the I like the White Sox.
On 670 The Score.
You are listening to a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday presented by your local Ford dealers in IDOT. It's not a game, Illinois.com. And on this Football Friday, we'll talk some Bears with John Heyman, but he is here from the MLB Network and also from the New York Post. But we'll talk baseball, but a little Bears mixed in, maybe a little Northwestern football. Good morning, John. Welcome in studio.
Good morning. What a setup you have here. It's absolutely beautiful. Like, prudential. I can see now the $8,000 I'm paying for my car insurance, where it goes. Good for them.
It's nice. You should see the health club.
Yeah. Oh, my
God. It's one of the nicest things about this
building. I want to move in.
It's on the 11th floor. It is a tremendous asset here, and it's a great place to go after every show. So, hey, I'm going up there in about
business. I missed
10:30.
Out.
Let's go. Yeah,
absolutely.
You are in your Northwestern.
Yes. Parents weekend.
Three-quarter zip. Your daughter, Maya, is a freshman
at
Evanston?
Yes. Welcome very exciting. She loves it. It's terrific. We met her for dinner last night in Evanston. It's very great and nostalgic to be back in Chicago where I went to school also. It's just, it's awesome. It's an awesome feeling.
I don't think it's a coincidence that they had Parents Weekend on a weekend they're not playing football.
Yeah, well, usually don't they schedule a bad team? I don't know.
I like David Braun. He's a reigning Big Ten Coach of the Year.
Yes.
But I just think this might not be accidental. It's very good scheduling, probably. Keep everybody upbeat. Have nobody asking the question, we're paying how much for that?
Well, you know what? The 4 years I was there, they won four games. So they won one game my freshman year against Wyoming. They didn't win until I was a senior, and I think they won three games, broke a big losing streak. I don't remember if it was 33, 34, whatever it was. So I think a team that wins three, four, five games is a great team. I'm pretty happy with it. But not all the parents actually went to Northwestern and saw the devastation of the football team.
They really have a nice makeshift temporary stadium they played in this year. On the lakefront, it's a tremendous distraction because you can find yourself looking at the views while you're watching the game, but they have not had the greatest of seasons. They're kind of right in the middle, and David Braun has his hands. So we didn't want to talk Northwestern football, though. You are here coming back from the GM meetings in San Antonio, Texas. So I think you're in Chicago, so we want to know about what you might have heard about, A, the White Sox ability to move Garrett Crochet, or B, the Cubs and how active you expect them to be. There was a report or some chatter about Owen Casey, one of the top prospects in the Cubs system, being bandied about his name and possibilities. Let's start with the Sox, though. How realistic is it that Garrett Crochet will be traded before spring training?
Oh, I think it's very realistic. I think it was a little bit of a surprise. He wasn't traded at the deadline, but it was that innings issue that was bothering other teams, and they didn't get what they wanted to get. And I don't blame them for not trading him. I actually think they're going to do better now, even with only 2 years to go. I say only. That's pretty good. Acquiring team gets an outstanding left-handed pitcher, 2 years to go. Who's going to make very little in arbitration because of the injuries in the past. So, I think they should be able to get a haul. My understanding is they got many offers before, Dodgers, Padres, two I know about. They were not close. They were not great offers. My understanding is the Dodgers offered Gavin Lux. We saw him in the World Series a bit. He was their starting second baseman still, but we hear now Mookie Betts is moving back to the infield. And we know what that means. He's moving to second base. So, I mean, Gavin Lux is already probably going to be out of a job with the Dodgers. So that's the Dodgers know what they're doing. You trade with the Dodgers, you're trading with a shark, right? Not easy.
You're trading with a team that just gave you Miguel Vargas, and I don't think you're very happy with that trade if you're a Sox fan right now. Small sample size, but was not the guy that you think was worth unloading Michael Kopech and Eric Fetty. And that's what you got in return.
No, it doesn't look good. I mean, they got two other minor leaguers, but I mean, what did Vargas hit? 104, 114 or something?
It was
not even mentionable, really, but I just mentioned it. I talked to Dodger people up there at the World Series, and they said they thought he would hit. They didn't know they had a position, and you need a position too. So even if he hits, he's got to have a position. So I'm not sure exactly what's going on with that, but they do believe that he will be a hitter, so, that's important. That should be good. But yeah, off to a terrible start with that.
I look at a team like the Orioles as they're going to lose Corbin Burns. They're going to go into next season after really a disappointing end to this one and feeling like maybe they need to do something to bolster their rotation or their pitching staff in general, however you use Garrett Crochet. They also have the prospects in the pipeline. Positional talent is what Chris Getz wants for the White Sox. They don't need necessarily pitchers. They have a lot of young, promising pitchers. But maybe the Orioles are a good fit because they do have the kind of prospects that the Sox might want.
Absolutely. I mean, if Crochet's the best guy out there, and he might be, we don't know what the Marlins are doing. The Marlins may be in the same kind of situation of trading young pitching to get positional players, so we'll see if they do that. But as of now, Crochet's the best starting pitcher out there available. So, and obviously the Orioles have the best young positional talent, so I think that would be great if they could make a deal with the Orioles. They're not going to get Jackson Holliday, even though he didn't hit. He hit a little bit better than Vargas, but not much. So they're not trading him, though. I mean, he should be a star at some point. They say they're not worried, but he obviously did not have a good first year. They have a lot of good young players, and that should be the team that they match up with. I think that's a good point.
Chris Getz, the general manager, entering his second season on the job, still relatively new to the role. He hires Will Venable, who was... Johnny comes with great credentials, hired by Theo Epstein, worked with and for Jed Hoyer in San Diego and in Chicago, sat next to Alex Cora in Boston and Bruce Bochy in Texas. We interviewed him last week on the show, bright, charismatic, really, it's easy to get enthused about everything that he says. It's a tough job to inherit, but let's face it, he could lose 100 games and still be improved by 21. And you look at he's making the rounds. He was on the Chicago lead on the Chicago Sports Network last night. He's making a strong first impression. What do you know about him, and what were people saying about this hire?
Well, first of all, Mully's not here, so I will say it. They will lose 100 games, 100-plus games. I don't think there's any question about that. Right. I think this is a real coup for the White Sox. I think they did great here. This is a guy who turned down interviews with the Mets and other teams previously. It's a little bit of a surprise that he was willing to go to the White Sox. He'd interview with the Marlins. Similar type situation. He obviously picked the White Sox over the Marlins. The Marlins would have hired him, obviously. He's got great credentials. Princeton man as well. I don't know if that matters. Most of the managers are not Ivy Leaguers, but hey, it doesn't hurt. I think he's terrific. I think they did a great job there.
Why do you think that he turned down the Mets last year and then would take the White Sox job this year? That doesn't seem like... Was this, there aren't very many openings available. Was it just a matter of, I better strike now while things are hot?
Here's what I think. I think everybody assumed he was the heir apparent because he did go to Princeton with Chris Young, and he's obviously a very good coach with great potential to be a manager. Everybody assumed he was the heir apparent to Bruce Bochy. And Bruce Bochy did not like retirement, so I'm not sure he's going to retire anyway, but the Texas Rangers just hired Skip Schumacher.
Yeah.
Right. So, they know, he probably knew that Skip Schumacher coming in, he's now the heir apparent, right? I mean, he did the best job that we've seen
in
the last 20 years.
The Sox didn't talk to him or really hire him.
They did talk to him, but okay. He pulled out weeks ago.
Because of the scope of the job?
Because they're not going to win. He'd rather wait and join a big market team that's got, you know, good players and has shown that they're going to win than go to a team that's going to lose 100, 110 games. I mean, that's why I say it's a coup for the White Sox to have gotten Venable, but I think Venable probably saw the handwriting on the wall. He figured he was the heir apparent, probably correctly at that point, and then he probably heard that they were hiring Schumacher, who got the Marlins to the playoffs. It's the best managing job anybody's done in the last 20 years, and he's the heir apparent now.
Process included, I think, as many as 60 names, whittled down to 20, down to 10. In terms of, you've covered a lot of job searches. Does that seem overly exhaustive or just exhausting?
It sounds like a lot to me, but look, I think they got a great guy for the situation. They got a guy that's going to grow with them. He's not going to come in and be Francona right away, but I think it's a good fit, and I give them credit. Yeah, I mean, I believe it. I'm sure they throw out every name they could think of, but and some of them are probably crazy. Probably there were only 20 that were legitimate candidates, and I think they came up with a very good one.
I always wondered if David Ross was one of those names, and when we talked to Will Venable, I asked him about David Ross possibly being one of his or the bench coach for the White Sox. David Ross still has a very good reputation in this town, very good reputation, I think, around the league. He was offered the Yankees bench coach job a year ago, turned it down. The Cubs were still paying him. What do you think about Rossi getting back into either the dugout as a bench coach in a role like that, or is he going to be heading back to broadcasting, or maybe not heading back at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think he did a good job with the Cubs. That's my opinion. I think he should get a managing job. I did hear that he interviewed for the Orioles bench job, and maybe he'll take that. I don't know. I would assume that they would offer it to him. I mean, certainly overqualified for that. I mean, I'm not surprised the White Sox. They haven't didn't hire a Cub. I don't want to say reject, but a Cub leftover, right? They've tried that before, and it hasn't always worked out exactly right.
Ricky Renteria was a guy that probably didn't get a fair shake with the Sox.
No, he didn't get a
fair shake. He was a Cub reject.
He didn't get a fair shake in two places, but he made a nice salary as a manager.
He's ever going to come back to baseball, you think?
No, I think, you know, there's certain guys, I think that's probably it. I mean, he seemed like a placeholder, you know?
Yeah,
is that a career to be a placeholder until they find someone they really like?
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, probably unfair. But that's probably the reality.
You think it'd be a step down? I mean, Rossi's got to get back into it at some point to become – is his next job going to be as a manager? Do you think he's holding out for that? Because you could see Brandon Hyde, who he worked with in Chicago with the Cubs as well, in Baltimore, making sense. That's why I thought Will Venable, who worked for him with the Cubs, making sense as well. So I could see both those situations being conducive to David Ross getting back into the grind, back into the game, getting his name out there.
Yeah, I mean, you could do that as an announcer, too, and that's probably a higher-paying job and a lot easier job than being the bench coach. But, you know, look, I'm not a baseball player or coach or whatever. Guys who want to be a manager, maybe they think it's better for their preparation, to enhance their potential as a manager. I don't know. To me, it seems easier just to do it through broadcasting, and he's a very good broadcaster as well. But I do think the Orioles would probably hire him if he's willing to go. And I'm a little surprised. I heard his name a little bit with Miami. Maybe that comes to fruition, but it doesn't sound like he's getting it there.
Cincinnati would have made sense, but Terry Francona became available.
You can't argue with Terry Francona.
Cannot.
No.
Not at all. What was the main purpose of, or every year, the GM meetings, they precede the owners' meetings and the winter meetings and all those things. What gets accomplished at the GM meetings?
Well, they're just kind of laying the groundwork for the deals and, you know, they check in with the players and the teams that they match up with. And, you know, I felt like this year it was a little more active, that there was actually bidding, that there were actually offers made and progress made. And, you know, we may see some of these big guys go off the board a little sooner than we, you know, expect. I mean, obviously, Scott Boras has taken his clients into spring training many times. That's not going to happen with Juan Soto. The owners are going out there to visit him next week. And, you know, he may have a deal before the winter meetings, and certainly probably should at the winter meetings at the latest.
Generalizing, but is this free agent period Juan Soto and everybody else, given how he's going to get what he gets because the numbers make that seem like a very sound investment? You're going to win a World Series maybe, or get to the World Series if you have Juan Soto, and the numbers can justify that. The price can just be justified. But after that, do you expect a relative decline in salaries because of the problems throughout baseball with RSNs and the way that affects the revenue streams for respective teams?
Well, it's like probably the rest of the country. The rich are going to get richer, and the middle class and the lower are going to probably suffer. Yeah, the smaller market teams that have these RSNs, that I think they're certainly concerned about their financial situations at the very least, at least in the short term. Long term, streaming may pay off more. I don't know. But in the short term, they do seem to be concerned. But the big teams that have their own stations, the Yankees, the Mets, you know, all these teams that have great TV situations, the Dodgers, Red Sox, Toronto, they're going to spend big. So the rich are going to get richer, the middle class are going to get poorer, and the lower class are really going to get poorer. That's the way I look at it. I did my, for the New York Post, predictions of the contracts, and Juan Soto, in my prediction, got three times more than the next guy. That's exactly, and I didn't do it on purpose as I'm thinking about it now. $630 million was my prediction for him. Corbin Burns was next at $210 million. So,
where did you have those guys landing?
Well, I think Soto... I think, you know, the Yankees are probably the favorite, but I don't think they're as big a favorite as other people think. The Mets are certainly in there. I think the Blue Jays are a threat. I really do. Now, if he wants to go for the most money, could end up in Toronto. Some guys won't want to go to Canada. I don't know. The Dodgers, they're always going to be a threat. That Ohtani deal was genius. It is the gift that keeps on giving. It's $700 million, but the Dodgers people are like, you know, it's so deferred that it's not $70 million a year. $68 million of it's deferred. It's actually worth about $30 million, depending on how much they make. And Mark Walter, who runs the team, runs Guggenheim, they do very well, right? So if they make 10, 11%,
local guy,
it's right, $30 million a year. And they're making a lot more than that in sponsorships and endorsements. There are two Asian airlines that are now sponsoring. I don't know what the Angels were doing, why they didn't accept this deal, because he's a creature of habit. From what everybody says, he might have gone back to the Angels. Is he happy with the Dodgers? I would think at this point he's pretty happy with the Dodgers, but I don't know what they were doing not accepting that. The Toronto was willing to do it. San Francisco, Dodgers, I'm not sure. We still don't have the answer whether the Cubs were willing to do it. It's the greatest deal in baseball history from the team standpoint.
Speaking of the Angels, you see they added Kyle Hendricks.
They did, yes.
With a one-year, $3 million contract. That's not a lot. Their expectations will be low. But I like it because it gives him a chance to return home. They drafted him in the 39th round, I think, back in 2008 or something. And I think when he was in high school and he went to Dartmouth and became the professor and all those things, now he's a big part of Cub lore. But nice to see a good guy going out on his terms.
Yeah, great guy. I hope it does well. And, you know, he might. I love to see guys who throw 85, 87 and still
not
perform.
Many left.
Not many. Jose Quintana throws 91 and we're all like kind of laughing at him like 91 and he's getting away with 91 used to be average.
He's a free agent too.
Yes.
Isn't he always a free agent?
Okay.
How many teams now? Like five teams.
He's had a lot of teams. Well, he had that big Chicago to Chicago trade.
That was a big one.
He's had a good career.
Whatever happened to those guys? Yeah. Eloy.
Eloy did not.
He's now the Orioles let him go, right? They DFA'd him. He's out of baseball.
They didn't pick up his option, right?
But the Cubs are going to be dealing with Cody Bellinger, who opted back in. We want to talk about the White Sox with whether or not they may or may not be on the move. We got a lot to talk about left with John Heyman from the New York Post and the MLB Network. He is in studio here on the Mullen Haw Show. We'll be back after this on 670 The Score.
This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy. Shipped nationwide.
Welcome back to Mullen Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Mully out today. John Heyman from the MLB Network and the New York Post is in town and he is in studio and we are talking White Sox and Cubs. John, just back from the GM meetings in San Antonio. How surprised were you that Cody Bellinger opted in to stay with the Cubs?
Not surprised at all. I heard some other people were some surprised, but I don't know. Maybe I knew some people around that situation. I don't know. I felt that, you know, he's got another year of the opt-out, right? So he's got $52.5 million for 2 years. But he can opt out and get, I think it's around $30 million after this. He can make $30 million, then opt out and become a free agent. He's still only going to be about 30 years old, right? So he did not have his usual year, right? His OPS was around 760, something like that. I understand nobody hit a Wrigley this year for whatever reason, but I don't think when teams are looking to pay somebody $30 million, they say, well, it was tough to hit a Wrigley. They look at it and say, it's at a 760 OPS, we can't pay him $30 million. So he's going to bet on himself a little bit. $52 million, nothing to sneeze at. If he stays, $30 million for 1 year. I think it was the right move.
And he also was hurt. And I know that sounds like an excuse. It really isn't, because if guys get hurt, you wonder, okay, are they? Is it like Eloy Jimenez jogging down to first, pulling a hamstring? Or is it something that has a reasonable explanation? Cody Bellinger ran into the brick wall at Wrigley once. And the other injury was he got hit by a pitch. And so I have a hard time looking at that and thinking injury prone. I think if this guy is healthy, you want him in the middle of your lineup. You want him in right field where he's going to play now with Pete Crow Armstrong in center, giving the Cubs one of the best defensive outfields in baseball.
Absolutely. He's a very good all-around player. I get what you're saying, but, you know, he's been a little bit up and down in his career. He's had MVP years, and then he's had other years where he's hit 100-something, right? A little better than Vargas, but 100-something. So, I mean, he hasn't had a consistent year. He's not Juan Soto, right? So I get it. I think he made the right call. I wouldn't have taken that gamble if I were him. The one who really gambled, I think, was Gerrit Cole, and then he came back and got the same money. So,
the Cubs were not one of the teams that you mentioned in the Juan Soto sweepstakes. The Cubs haven't really been at the forefront of many of these conversations for the superstar mega deals. Why is that?
Well, they should. I've come on here 100 times and said that they're not going to listen to me. Their revenues are spectacular. It's even greater than before, I'm quite sure. And they should. They need that kind of a player, right? I mean, they have solid players all around, and what has that gotten them? They've been a little bit better than a 500 team generally over the last couple of years. They need to have stars, but, you know, is it possible that they're in the mix? I guess so, but I have not heard that. You do hear one thing, that all the owners want their team secret. They want to be in the background. I mean, maybe they really want to be secret, because we've figured out 7 teams that are in already. So maybe, I don't know, it seems like a long shot though, but we knew going in that the biggest contract they ever gave was the $177 million, I believe it was, to Dansby Swanson. It's a far cry to go from $177 to $600+. I just didn't see it. And everything that they say is that they're prioritizing pitching. If they're looking for a bat, it's going to be right-handed. You know, it would be quite a smokescreen if they were actually going to go after him.
Where's Pete Alonso going to end up?
I think it'll either be back to the Mets, package deal with Soto, or, you know, I think the Giants have trouble getting stars to go there, and they are willing to pay, and they have great revenue, and I think that would be my other guess, would be...
there again, like, why the Cubs should be that team. I know they.
What would you do? You move Bush to second, think, and then trade Horner?
I don't know what the
DH.
I think Nico Horner is coming off surgery that I think he'll be ready for spring training. It probably cuts into their trade possibilities, because it's hard to trade a guy who's recovering from surgery. But I just don't know. You would stay away from Pete Alonso because you have Michael Bush. You're gonna have to trade somebody.
Yeah,
you're gonna have to trade.
Well, Bush was solid, and he's
Bush
cheap.
Bush was solid, and he is cheap, and he is affordable. But I think solid, cheap,
that's what
and affordable,
they go for.
Is that the way you win a pennant? If you're
well,
the
that's
Cubs.
What they go for. That's their history. They go for solid
above
and cheap.
Above average, you know? That is true. Intelligent spending is what we're told.
Other than for the manager. That's the one they really stepped out on.
Baseball. The Cubs don't have a star. We say it all the time. Chicago sports doesn't really have a star. But the Cubs, unless they get really creative this offseason, it looks like they're going into next year. The plan is to, just like they went into last year with a lot of really good players, hoping that they outperform maybe a couple of guys that have career years and you eke into the playoffs. Maybe it's an 83-win team. We heard Craig Counsell, though, say you need to be a 90-win team. I think that puts the pressure on a little bit.
Absolutely. The Mets got in by one game with 89 wins, right? And there was a team that had 89 wins that did not get in. So I agree. I mean, there was that one year where the Diamondbacks got in with 84, 85 wins. But I agree. You need to be a 90-win team. Can they do it by enhancing the rotation? Maybe. I could see Max Fried as a guy that would really help them a lot.
Ooh.
That would be a big one if they could get him. That may be worth 5 games. You know, you could do it through the pitching. They're positional players, they do look solid. Maybe Crow Armstrong will take a step offensively. Maybe they'll get some improvement from some of their younger guys. You got to figure Horner's going to be better. You got to figure Swanson's going to be better. They've got guys who had kind of off years. And, you know, they probably should have won more games than they did with the talent they have. They're probably figuring that. But, solid and cheap. They like that.
Corbin Burns at over $200 million at his age would scare me. But yet you feel confident he will get that kind of money.
Yeah, I mean, any of these pitchers are going to scare you. The way things have gone with the pitchers, they all get hurt all the time, it seems. I mean, he is a guy who has been very durable, very dependable. I think Fried, you know, at his top might be even better, but he's a guy who's a little more fragile. He's been out a lot. Now, does that mean he's going to be fragile in the future? Not necessarily. I mean, to me, I like Fried. 139 ERA plus over his career, that's pretty good. I mean, Burns has been very consistent. He's going to be very popular. due to his injury history. And, you know, I think all the big market teams are going to be on him, and most of them will be on Fried as well.
Given your experience covering free agency, a connection like Corbin Burns and Craig Counsell, a manager that knows a player well, a free agent that might feel comfortable in that environment, does it matter? How much does it really matter when it comes down to free agency and money?
I mean, unless the manager's got incredible power, I don't think it matters. I think it seems to matter if the general manager has a connection. You know, the Mets have David Stearns, but does he have a good connection with Burns or not? They had a bad arbitration in which Burns lost. He should have won, by the way, but he did lose, and he was very upset. He fired his agent and was not happy with the Brewers, came out and said so. So that might be, that's a connection, but that might be a negative connection. but he's certainly not, that was not negative for Counsell. So
speaking of ex-Brewer pitchers, do you feel like the Astros are committed to trading Josh Hader, or do you think that they're going to bring him back? Because that was a rumor around here a couple weeks ago that the Astros might be moving or looking to shed salary. Certainly there would be a lot of people interested, even though there would be still a lot of money left on that deal.
Well, I know they were hoping to shop Ryan Pressly, who had been their closer before Hader got there. And Ryan Pressly has a full no trade, lives in Houston full time. The kids, you know, he's got kids there. He's not going to accept a trade, even though he's now not the closer. He's now the setup man. He loves Houston. You know, no accounting for taste. I love Chicago. I've been to Houston, don't love it, but he loves it. It's all good. You know, I think that if Presley's not going to want to be traded, he's got a full no trade. I think that is a possibility that they consider trading him.
You think the Blue Jays are going to move Vlad Guerrero?
I don't think so. I mean, I do think they're going big for Soto. And, you know, if you want to get Soto, you better have a winner. I mean, the contract is probably number one. I shouldn't say probably, but you never know. With some guys, it's not. But the contract, he's played it out to free agency, so I assume the contract is one. But he wants to win. I don't think there's any question about that. He loved having Judge bat behind him. I think he'd love having Guerrero bat behind him. I think they'll make a big offer to Guerrero and hope that they can sign him, and by a big offer, they're going to have to beat Rafael Devers of $310 million or whatever he got. It's probably going to have to be around $350 million for Guerrero, but Toronto's got money. Look what they were trying to do with Ohtani.
Yeah.
So I think they make a big effort and a good chance to keep Guerrero, and that's partly to impress Soto and then give him. I mean, they're going to be the team that, if they get Soto, that's the team that spends the $1 billion. Last year was the Dodgers, and people will criticize, oh, free agency, you can't build a winning team. The Dodgers spent over $1 billion, and they won the World Series, so it works.
While in San Antonio for the GM meetings, did you hear much conversation, or whether it wasn't in San Antonio, just since the news reports came last month about Dave Stewart wanting to buy a team, the White Sox, and maybe move them to Nashville? That was the speculation here. Just wonder how real or perceived you thought that story was.
Well, he definitely wants to buy the White Sox. It's really Jerry Reinsdorf. And while I'm close to Dave Stewart, Jerry Reinsdorf, you know, he kind of jokes with me about the team. Whenever I ask him, he offers the team to me, and he knows I'm a writer, so that's not happening. So I don't know. It's up to Jerry Reinsdorf. Dave Stewart would love to buy the team. He's been in on that Nashville situation. They're the next city to get a team, but he'd love to buy the White Sox. And, I mean, obviously they got that Stewart La Russa connection, right? That's a long-time friendship, and he'd love it, but it's up to Jerry.
Is there a perception around the league that the White Sox are doing this right? Even though you said 100 losses next season, that's a very big third season in a row. You look at the Orioles and you can point to how it does take years. The Astros, however you want to look at it, you can find examples. But what would be the perception around the league of what the White Sox are doing?
Well, they've got to rebuild. They've got to reset. They need to trade Crochet. They'll try to trade Vaughn. I'm sure they don't have a lot of assets to trade. I thought they were going to have a big deadline last year. Fetty was just not that popular. I mean, to me, the guy was 7-4 with the White Sox. 7-4. That's a miracle. They should have been able to, in my mind, but he doesn't throw that hard, and that's what teams look for. So they weren't able to do that. Crochet had the inning situation. Robert had a terrible season, so you're not going to sell him low. Same now. So, I mean, they're in a tough spot, and it's sad because this is a big market team. I mean, the Orioles are a small market team. You know, it's not a good situation where you have a big market team that's going to lose 100 games 3 years in a row. I mean, Houston's a big market. I know I've kind of ripped Houston before, but it is a big market. They had three of the worst seasons in history consecutively, but this is Chicago. Come on. You can't do this in Chicago, right?
No, right. I
feel bad. I heard you talking earlier about we don't have a star.
Where are the stars?
I guess Bedard is Bedard. I don't know. I don't follow hockey.
Bedard's a star in the making.
Okay,
he's going to be one of the best players in the NHL.
But the football, and we were going to talk football, but I don't blame you for not bringing it up because I don't know anything. But I mean,
before you go, you going Sunday? Are you going to go to Bears Patriots?
No, I'm not.
You believe in Caleb Williams?
I don't want to. I mean, I know nothing. So, you know, I mean, I covered the Raiders.
That doesn't necessarily mean you can't have an opinion on a job.
They should have taken Daniels. They should have taken Jaden Daniels.
No, they shouldn't have.
All right.
Okay,
well,
now
that's
get
my
out
opinion.
Of here. Get out.
That's my opinion. I've watched 30 seconds of football this year. I did cover the Raiders in 1986.
Did you
And
really?
I was at the Walter Payton when he broke the rushing record in 1984. I started after Northwestern at the Daily Dispatch in Moline, Illinois. They sent me here because Peyton was going to break the record. It was 1984, I believe.
You covered that game?
I was at the game. Yeah, I still have the clipping.
That's awesome.
I broke the record.
I did not realize that.
So I knew something about football in the mid-80s, but that's a while ago.
So you went from the Daily Northwestern to the Daily Journal? Or
Daily
Moline?
Dispatch.
Daily Dispatch.
I don't blame you for not knowing the name of the paper in Moline, Illinois. But Still around, still survives. Unlike most papers, it's still around.
Well, football reporter John Heyman, it was great.
No,
to see
don't
you.
Take my. Caleb. Everyone should listen to you about Caleb Williams. You actually watch the games. You know football. You know what's going on. But you know, so that's my opinion.
All right. Well,
you got it.
It's been great to have you here. I hope you have a great weekend visiting your daughter Maya at Northwestern Parents Weekend in Evanston. I've been part of that. It's been great. It's to see you and. And we look forward to talking. We appreciate, you know, every time we talk to you during the season, we enjoy that because of all the insight and stuff that you bring each and every Tuesday.
You guys are the best. And Mully, I feel so bad for him as a White Sox fan. It's really sad what's going on there. But I do have some faith in Chris Getz, and I think they're on the right track. But it's a very slow track. So I'm sorry about that. And it's always great to be on here.
John Heyman from MLB Network and the New York Post, thank you for being here. It has been a busy week breaking down the Bears and looking ahead to the Patriots game Sunday at Soldier Field. This is a listen to what we had in our week in review.
Mullen Haw got you ready for Bears Week 10 matchup against the New England Patriots with experts' analysis from former Bears head coach Dave Wannstedt.
No, they're going to win this week. I mean, come on. Arizona's not... I know they win, but I'm telling you, Bears are going to win. Kyler Murray is no better than the kid they just faced.
You got the Bears winning this game.
I do.
Okay.
Because their defense?
Because they're a better team.
Bolin Crutes.
We're only halfway through. I don't think they want to panic like that with a young quarterback and create more chaos around him with a new play caller and just kind of what does Shane Waldron do every day in the building then?
Chicago Bear wide receiver, DJ Moore.
You just got to go back to the drawing board and start putting people in different positions to be able to move the ball and just stay on the same page and stick together.
Jarrett Payton.
Cole Kmet should be the one that's upset. Like, one target? Are you kidding me? Be that safety blanket for Caleb. The fact that he is not involved clearly tells me something is wrong with this offense. Don't understand it.
Joe Ostrowski.
There is certainly a move there in favor of the Patriots, which may be surprising to some. It's probably surprising to some to see the Bears, where some people speculate maybe there's some quit in this team right now. It's a terrible offensive line, rookie quarterbacks. So people are looking and say, is there really that much of a difference? And that's why they bet New England early.
Bears Tribune beat reporter Dan Wiederer.
They're not very good. You know, and that yesterday, going through it, okay, they're the worst offense in the league in terms of total offense. They don't pass the ball really well. They give up pressure on defense. They're bottom 10 in interception rate and sack rate. Dare you, without going to the web, to name two players on the Patriots defense, you're not going to be able to do it. It's not a good opponent. They're 2-7. They won their opener. They've lost, you know, a bunch since. And you can't take care of business Sunday. Uh-oh.
BetMGM, Hawks great, Chris Chelios.
I hope they could start playing a little better because it did take a couple steps backwards.
NFL Network reporter, Stacey Dales.
So I don't know what kind of accountability we're going to get this week. I really don't. I'm perplexed. I think that's the word that kind of when I look at the Bears, I just feel very perplexed about what to expect.
Nick Costas.
The Bears should be able to score and have a better offensive effort. And then on the flip side, like Drake May's been really good this season, the rookie quarterback for the Patriots. And I think the Patriots can do enough on their end to get this over the total. So I'll go over 39 on Sunday in the Super Bowl 20 rematch.
Odyssey NFL insider, Brian Baldinger.
Can't really claim right now that they have an identity. Like they know where the, like for example, like by 9 weeks you should go, okay, red zone, this is what we're good at. This is where the ball's going. Third down. And three, okay, Keenan Allen on a shake route. Like, I can't really say that about Chicago right now.
Chicago Tribune Bears beat reporter, Brad Biggs.
I mean, if they put it together, they could beat this New England team by 2 touchdowns. They really could. I don't have a high degree of faith in that. I've got the Bears winning 20-7.
Joe Fortenbaugh.
Bears still can play defense. I know they've struggled with the Hail Mary a couple weeks ago, but they were playing really good defense up until that point. Arizona game didn't look very good. This is where you can get back on track. As we know, Bears offense is struggling. You don't need me to rehash any of it. You've probably been talking about it all week. Patriots can play a little D, so I can go under 38 next.
Mark Grody.
I expect a slog out there. I think it's going to be I do think the Bears are going to win. I do. It's going to be a 16-13 Bears win out there. The Bears have every reason in the world to be motivated.
Can the Bears win against the New England Patriots? Mullin Haw and your reactions to the Bears' upcoming matchup on 670 The Score, the home for Bears fans.
Oh, you heard Dave Wannstedt and Mark Grody make their predictions, and you can hear them live at the Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo, Michigan for the Four Winds Football Forecast on Monday. The event is free to the public, starts at 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central. Wanny will be giving a midseason review and forecast for the rest of the season and an autograph and photo session with Coach Wannstedt. You can do it all before Monday night's football game. That is Monday at Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo, Michigan. You heard all our predictions. What are your predictions? Are you thinking the Bears can pull out a victory over the last place Patriots? They better. I said 27-19. Mully said 2017 Bears. Big said 2017 Bears. Brandon and Dustin are on board with their Bears predictions. I think they have them 20-10, Dustin said. I think Brandon said 20-13. A lot of low-scoring games. Can't the Bears score 35 points? That Thursday night football game last night was outstanding. Want to see an offense like that? That'd be great to have an offensive explosion on Sunday at the lakefront. I doubt it. Drake May versus Caleb Williams. Lot to look forward to. Lot to discuss. Certainly all day here on The Score. Keep it right here. Next, Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris in for Dan Bernstein on the Bernstein and Harris Show. We'll bring you Layla and Marshall when we come back. It's Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy. Shipped nationwide.